यथोऽन्वयातितरतश्चार्तेषभिज्ञस्वराट् तेने ब्रह्महृदाय आदिकवये मुह्यन्ति यत्सूरयः तेजो वारिमृदां यथा विनिमयो यत्र त्रिसर्गो मृषा धाम्ना स्वेन सदा निरस्तकुहकं सत्यं परं धीमहि धर्मः प्रोज्झितः कैतवोत्र परमो निर्मत्सराणां सतां वेद्यं वास्तवमत्र वस्तु शिवदं तापत्रयोन्मूलनम् श्रीमद्भागवते महामुनिकृते किं वा परैरीश्वरः सद्यो हृदि अवरुध्यतेऽत्र कृतिभिः शुश्रूषभिस्तत्क्षणात् निगमकल्पतरोर्गलितं फलं शुकमुखादमृतद्रवसं युतं पिबत भागवतं रसमालयं मुहुरहो रसिका भुवि भावुकाः प्रायेणल्पायुषः सव्यकलावस्मिन् युगे जनाः मन्दाः सुमन्दमतयो मन्दभाग्याभ्युपद्रुताः यत्पादसंश्रयासूतमुनयः प्रशमानया मायनाः सद्यः पुनन्ति उपसृष्टाः स्वर्धुनियापो नु सेवया वयं नु उतृप्याम उत्तमश्लोकविक्रमे यशृण्वतां रसज्ञानं स्वादु स्वादु पदे पदे यस्वानुभावमखिलश्रुतिसारमेकम् अध्यात्मदीपमतितितिरीशतां तमोन्धम् संसारिणां करुणयाः पुराणगुह्यं तं व्याससूनमुपयामि गुरुं मुनीनां स वै पुंसां परो धर्मो यथो भक्तिरधोक्षजे अहेतुक्यप्रतिहताय यात्मा सुप्रसीदति वासुदेवे भगवती भक्तियोगः प्रयोजितः जनयत्याशु वैराग्यं ज्ञानं च यदहैतुकं धर्मस्वनिष्ठितः पुंसां विश्वक्सेन कथासु यः नोत्पादयेद्यदिरतिं श्रमयेव हि केवलं वदन्ति तत्तत्त्वविदस्तत्त्वं यज्ज्ञानमव्यव्ययं ब्रह्मेति परमात्मेति भगवानिति शब्द्यते अतः पुंविर्द्विजश्रेष्ठा वर्णाश्रमविभागशः स्वनिष्ठितस्य धर्मस्य संसिद्धिर्हरितोषणम् तस्मादेकेन मनसा भगवान् सात्पदां पतिः श्रोतव्यः कीर्तितव्यश्च ध्येयः पूज्यश्च नित्यदा यत्वनुध्यासिना युक्ता कर्मग्रन्थी निबन्धनम् छिन्दन्ति कोविदास्तस्य को न कुर्यात् कथारतिम् शुश्रूषो श्रद्धधानस्य वासुदेवकथारुचिः स्यान्महत्सेवया विप्रा पुण्यतीर्थनिषेवणात् शृण्वतां स्वकथाः कृष्ण पुण्यश्रवणकीर्तनः हृदयन्तस्तो ह्यभद्राणि विधुनोति सुहृत्सताम् एते चांशकलाः पुंसकृष्णस्तु भगवान् स्वयम् इन्द्रारिव्याकुलं लोकं मृडयन्ति युगे युगे सवे ददातु पदवीं परस्य दुरन्तवीर्यस्य रथाङ्गपाणेः यो मायया सन्ततयानुवृत्त्या भजेत तत्पादसरोजगन्धम् कृष्णे स्वधामोपगते धर्मज्ञानादिभिः सह कलौ नष्टदृशामेष पुराणार्को धुनोदितः नायत्वचश्चित्रपदं हरेर्यशो जगत्पवित्रं प्रगृणीत कर्ह्यचिद् तद्वायसं तीर्थमुषन्ति मानसा न यत्र हंसा निरमन्त्यु शिक्षयाः तद्वाग्विसर्गो जनतागविप्लवो यस्मिन् प्रतिश्लोकमबद्धवत्यपि नामाञ्जनन्तस्य यशोऽङ्कितानि यत् शृण्वन्ति गायन्ति गृणन्ति साधवः नष्कर्ममप्यच्युतभाववर्जितं न शोभते ज्ञानमलं निरञ्जनं कुतः पुनश्च श्वभद्रमीश्वरेण चार्पितं कर्म यदप्यकारणं हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
ಶಿವಾಯ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ನಾರಾಯಣಂ ನಮಸ್ಕೃತ್ಯ ನರಂ ಚೈವ ನರೋತ್ತಮಂ ದೇವೀಂ ಸರಸ್ವತೀಂ ವ್ಯಾಸಂ ತತೋ ಜಯಮುದೀರಯೇತ್ ನಷ್ಟಪ್ರಾಯೇಷು ಅಭದ್ರೇಷು ನಿತ್ಯಂ ಭಾಗವತ ಸೇವಯಾ ಭಗವತೀರ್ ಉತ್ತಮ ಶ್ಲೋಕೇ ಭಕ್ತಿರ್ಭವತೀ ನೈಷ್ಠಿಕೀ ಕೃಷ್ಣಾಯ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ದೇವಕೀ ನಂದನಾಯ ಚ ನಂದಗೋಪಕುಮಾರಾಯ ಗೋವಿಂದಾಯ ನಮೋ ನಮಃ ಓಂ ಅಜ್ಞಾನತಿಮಿರಂಧಸ್ಯ ಜ್ಞಾನಾಂಜನಶಲಾಕಯಾ ಚಕ್ಷುರೋನ್ಮಿಲಿತಂ ಯೇನ ತಸ್ಮೈ ಶ್ರೀ ಗುರವೇ ನಮಃ ಶ್ರೀಚೈತನ್ಯ ಮನೋಭೀಷ್ಟಂ ಸ್ಥಾಪಿತಂ ಯೇನ ಭೂತಲೇ ಸ್ವಯಂ ರೂಪ ಕದಾ ಮಯ್ಯಂ ತದಾತೀಸ್ವ ಪದಾಂತಿಕಂ ವಂದೇಹಂ ಶ್ರೀಗುರು ಶ್ರೀಯುತಾಪದಕಮಲಂ ಶ್ರೀಗುರೂನ್ ವೈಷ್ಣವಾಂಶ್ಚ ಶ್ರೀರೂಪಾಂ ಸಾಗ್ರಜಾತಾಂ ಸಹಗಣಾರಗುಣಾತಾನ್ವಿತಂ ತಾಂ ಸಜೀವಂ ಸಾದ್ವೈತಂ ಸಾವಧೂತಂ ಪರಿಜನಾಸಹಿತಂ ಕೃಷ್ಣಚೈತನ್ಯದೇವಂ ಶ್ರೀರಾಧಾ ಕೃಷ್ಣಪಾದಾ ಸಹಗಣಾಲಲಿತಾ ಶ್ರೀವಿಶಾಖಾನ್ವಿತಾಂಶ್ಚ ಹೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಕರುಣಾ ಸಿಂಧು ದೀನಬಂಧೋ ಜಗತ್ಪತೆ ಗೋಪೇಶ ಗೋಪಿಕಾ ಕಾಂತ ರಾಧಾಕಾಂತ ನಮೋಸ್ತುತೆ ತಪ್ತ ಕಾಂಚನ ಗೌರಾಂಗಿ ರಾಧೇ ವೃಂದಾವನೇಶ್ವರಿ ವೃಷಭಾನುಸುತೆ ದೇವಿ ಪ್ರಣಮಾಮಿ ಹರಿಪ್ರಿಯೇ ವಾಂಚಾಕಲ್ಪತರುಭ್ಯಶ್ಚ ಕೃಪಾಸಿಂಧುಭ್ಯಯೇವ ಚ ಪತಿತಾನಾಂ ಪಾವನೇಭ್ಯೋ ವೈಷ್ಣವೇಭ್ಯೋ ನಮೋ ನಮಃ ಜಯ ಶ್ರೀ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ಪ್ರಭು ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ಶ್ರೀ ಅದ್ವೈತ ಗದಾಧಾರ್ ಶ್ರೀವಾಸಾದಿ ಗೌರ ಭಕ್ತವೃಂದ ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ 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 ಹರೇ 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 ರಾಮೋ ಹರೇ ರಾಮೋ ರಾಮ ರಾಮೋ ಹರೇ ಹರೇ
ಸೊ ಬಿಫೋರ್ ವಿ ಬಿಗಿನ್ ದ ಸೆಕೆಂಡ್ ಚಾಪ್ಟರ್ ವಿ ವಿಲ್ ಬಿ ಎ ಬ್ರೀಫ್ ರೀಕ್ಯಾಪ್ ಆಫ್ ದ ಫಸ್ಟ್ ಚಾಪ್ಟರ್ ಕ್ಯಾನ್ ಸಂಬಡಿ ಟೆಲ್ ವಾಟ್ ವರ್ ದ ಫಸ್ಟ್ ತ್ರೀ ವರ್ಸಸ್ what did they describe first three verses first verse describes sambandha gyan greatness of the absolute truth and second verse describes greatness of the Srimad Bhagavatam or it describes the abhideya the process by which we can actually know the absolute truth by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam and third verse describes the sweetness of Srimad Bhagavatam the sense that although the by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam is so great that by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam one can capture the supreme lord within one's heart but the same Srimad Bhagavatam is also very sweet the sense of being a ripened fruit of a desire tree of the Vedas and then in the fourth verse describes the sages of Naimisharanya, how they had assembled in the place of Naimisharanya forest to perform a sacrifice for going to heavenly planets, or for the to perform a sacrifice for going to Vaikuntha planets. And fifth verse describes that how they approached Suta Goswami in order to inquire from him. And then before they start the inquiry, what do? They glorify Suta Goswami. So what were the qualities of Suta Goswami which they glorified? He is sinless, well-versed in scriptures, itihasas, puranas and dharma shastras. Spotless in character, he has undergone systematic study in Vedanta, and then submissive to the spiritual master. So these four qualities were described in three verses, 6, 7 and 8. And then in the ninth verse, they asked the first question, that what is of ultimate benefit to the living entity? Please describe in an easily understandable term, and please describe in a thorough manner. And then in the tenth verse, they say, they talk about the symptoms of Kali Yuga, because they talk about the symptoms of Kali Yuga. The reason why they talk is because the Kali Yuga people have so many faults, they just only want, they do not want to hear the entirety of all the scriptures. They just want to know what is the ultimate, what Suta Goswami has ascertained to be the ultimate good by reading all the scriptures. Only they want to know only that. And then in the 11th verse, they ask the second question. What is the essence of all the scriptures? And then in the 12th verse, they ask the third question, that the purpose of Krishna's appearance. And then in the 13th verse, they mentioned that how the Supreme Lord has appeared. He said, please describe the teachings of the acharyas, because by hearing, one will be uplifted both by hearing and also speaking about them. Or Vishnu Chakotaku says, the Lord has appeared for the material prosperity and also for the liberation of the living entities. And then in three verses, 14, 15 and 16, in three verses, they talk about the glories of the holy name, glories of devotees, and glories of Krishna Katha. And then in the 17th verse, they ask the fourth question. Fourth question is, please describe the activities of Krishna, who is the form of all the avatars, the source of all the avatars. And then they ask the fifth question, the 18th verse, that is, what is the fifth question? Please describe about the stories of the avatars. And then in the 19th verse, they express that how they are never satiated by hearing about the glories of the Lord. Vayam tuna vitrupyama uttama shloka vikrami. So before then, in the 23rd verse, they ask the last question. And before that, in three verses, they say that how the Supreme Lord Krishna appeared along with Lord Balaram and performed many superhuman acts. Guda kapata manushaha. His intentions are very concealed. He does not, people considered him to be an ordinary human being. And then they say that, and Suta Goswami said that, it is surprising that you people are interested in ritualistic sacrifice. Why are you asking so many questions? When Suta Goswami is posing this, then sages are saying, actually we have assembled in the place of Naimisharanya, on the pretext of performing a sacrifice we have come here, but our actual goal is to hear about the Supreme Lord. And then they glorify Suta Goswami by saying that we want to cross the ocean of Kali Yuga, the 22nd verse. We want to cross the ocean of Kali Yuga, and by the grace of the Supreme Lord, we have got you as the captain. And we can, with the help of you as a captain and with the help of the ship in the form of Krishna Katha, we want to cross the ocean of the falls of Kali Yuga. And then 23rd verse, they ask the last question. As where the principles of dharma have taken shelter after Krishna's disappearance. So now the second chapter, Suta Goswami starts answering the questions. So we'll recite the first verse. Vyasa Uvacha. So we'll recite together. Iti Samprashna Samhrishto Vipranam Roma Harshanihi Prati Pujya Vachastesham Pravaktum Upachakrame. So I will give a brief like summary of the whole chapter, then before we go to the verses. So this chapter, breakup of the whole chapter, in the first verse Vyasadeva says, Vyasadeva explains, tells the reaction of Suta Goswami on hearing the questions of the sages of Naimisharanya. How he is very delighted, how he is very happy to hear these questions. Iti samprashna. Samprashna means because they asked the perfect questions. Because the sages asked the perfect questions, Suta Goswami became samhrishta. He became perfectly satisfied. So he became perfectly satisfied because of hearing the perfect questions. And then he began to speak. So from the second verse onwards, Suta Goswami starts speaking. So second to fifth verse, the second to fifth verse, first he starts actually answering the questions from the sixth verse, but the second to fifth verse, he glorifies and congratulates the hearers. So in the second and third verse, he offers obeisances to his spiritual master, Shukadeva Goswami, and in the fourth verse, he offers obeisances to Naranarayana Rishi, Vyasadev, and Saraswati, and Narayanam Namaskritya, Naram and Krishna himself. So he is offering obeisance to four personalities. And in the fifth verse, he congratulates the sages for asking such questions. So after doing this, then he starts answering from the sixth verse onwards. So from the verse number 6 to 22nd, he establishes bhakti as a process of abhideya. Bhakti as a process of abhideya. So the sages ask the question, the second question which they asked is that, please tell us the essence of the scriptures by which one will be completely satisfied. Yenatma suprasidati. By which the soul is completely satisfied, or by which the intelligence or the mind is completely satisfied. So they give the exact answer in the sixth question, that is by practicing devotional service. And then they establish how bhakti is the process of abhideya, establishing our connection with Krishna from 6th to 22nd verse. And then from 23rd till the rest of the chapter, they establish how bhakti is to be performed only to Vishnu or Krishna. Bhakti is to be performed only to Vishnu. So that is, in one sense, a broad breakup of this chapter. So 1 to 5, then 6 to 22, and 23 to 34. Well, within this, there can be sub-breakups that we will see when we actually go through the chapter. So second verse, Suta Uvacha, Yam Pravrajantam Anupetam Apeta Krityam Dvaipayano Virahakatara Ajuhava Putreti Tanmayataya Taravo Binedos Tam Sarva Bhuta Hrudayam Munimanatosmi.
Let me offer my respectful obeisances and which were absorbed in the same feeling of separation in response to the bereaved father.
So here, so in the second and third verse, Suta Goswami offers obeisance to Sukadeva Goswami. So we can see one principle here is that Suta Goswami offers obeisances to his immediate spiritual master, that is Sukadeva Goswami, and then he offers obeisances to Naranarayana Rishi, because Naranarayana Rishi is the presiding deity of the place of Badrikashram, Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Chaiva Narottamam. And then he offers obeisances to Lord Krishna, who is the subject of Srimad Bhagavatam, Narottamam, and he offers obeisances to Saraswati Devi, the Shakti of Krishna, and he offers obeisances to Vyasadev, who has been interested with this work of Srimad Bhagavatam. So he offers obeisances to his immediate spiritual master and also his Param Guru, Vyasadev, and other personalities. And not only that, he congratulates the hearers also, the sages in the fifth verse. So we see this principle, like many times, like our respect is limited to certain people. We either respect, sometimes people respect only the immediate spiritual master, but they don't respect the connection of the spiritual master with the Guru Parampara. Or sometimes a person respects maybe the previous acharyas, like some people respect Srila Prabhupada, but they don't actually give respect to Srila Prabhupada's disciples. They only respect the remote acharyas. They don't respect the immediate the gurus. And sometimes we respect our spiritual masters and others, but we don't respect the hearers. Because of them we are actually able to speak something about Krishna. But here Suta Goswami, he is offering obeisances to his immediate spiritual master Sukadeva Goswami, and in one sense the whole Guru Parampara, by offering obeisance to Vyasadev, the presiding deity of Badrikashram, Naranarayan Rishi, Krishna, Saraswati Devi, and he is also thanking the hearers, the sages. So in this way he is respecting everyone. So here, in two verses, he is glorifying Sukadeva Goswami. So, yam pravrajantam anupetam apeta krityam. So, here he says that, let me offer my obeisance to Sukadeva Goswami who can enter the hearts of all. So, he is telling that particular incident when Sukadeva Goswami, when he took birth, first of all, he did not want to come out of the womb because he felt that he would become captivated by the illusory energy. Some of the Supreme Lord assured him protection from Maya. So then he came out of the womb. As soon as he came out of the womb, he immediately went towards the forest. That time Vyasadev went after Sukadeva Goswami by calling out, "O son!" When Sukadeva Goswami, when Vyasadev was going after him by calling out for Sukadeva Goswami, it is described only the trees echoed for the voice of Vyasadev. His father Vyasadev, feeling separation from him, cried out, "O son!" And only the trees, which were absorbed in same feelings of separation, echoed in response to the bereaved father. So here it is explained how Sukadeva Goswami, he was such a great personality, even that he affected the hearts of even the trees. Even the trees were feeling separation from Sukadeva Goswami. So Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti explains that when the sages asked these questions to Suta Goswami, so Suta Goswami was feeling that, I have to answer these questions, I have to tell the essence of all the scriptures by which a living entity should be completely pleased, should be completely satisfied. Suprasidati. So which scripture I should consult? What should I consult in order to tell the essence of the scriptures by which a person will be completely satisfied? So then he was thinking that there are many scriptures which give the essences, but I should seek out that which is pleasing to the intellect as decided by the most righteous persons. There are some sages who have written, who have actually written the Sankhya Shastras. Some people have written the Upanishads. Some people, and there is also Vedanta Sutra. All these are in one sense considered to be the conclusion. Upanishad is actually conclusion of the Vedas. Vedanta Sutra is conclusion of the Vedas in Sutra format. So all these are considered to be the essence. But still, which one I should consult so that when I tell that essence, one will be completely satisfied. So then Sutta Goswami was thinking that I should speak that scripture which remained steady and without objections from anyone. There will be many scriptures, but I should choose that scripture which remained steady and without objections from anyone. And since it gave pleasure to all the sages, I should speak actually Srimad Bhagavatam, which was spoken by Shukadeva Goswami to Parikshit Maharaj. So he was contemplating upon what he should speak in order to satisfy the hearers, in order to actually satisfy the intelligence, and in order to satisfy the living entity completely. Then he comes to the conclusion, I should speak that scripture which has remained steady and which has actually which gave pleasure to all the sages and which is without objections from anyone. Then he decides to choose to speak Srimad Bhagavatam to the sages, as an answer to the sages. So then he felt, so if I have to speak Srimad Bhagavatam, first actually I should actually surrender to Shukadeva Goswami. I should first I should seek the blessings of Shukadeva Goswami, because he is the original speaker of Srimad Bhagavatam, and he is, and from him only I have heard Srimad Bhagavatam. He is my spiritual master. So with that purpose, he is actually offering obeisances to Shukadeva Goswami. In fact, Sutta Goswami was feeling, then he actually remembers this incident of Shukadeva Goswami, that Shukadeva Goswami, he was liberated right from the birth. Prabhupada explains in his purport, he says, he describes that he talks about the position of a Vaishnava. He explains this verse, Janmana Jayate Shudra Samskarat Bhaved Vija Vedapatat Bhaved Vipra Brahma Janati Iti Brahmana. That by birth a person is a Shudra, and when a person undergoes the purificatory ritual, then he becomes a twice born or a dvija. Then when a person seeks spiritual progress, then he approaches a spiritual master. So then he, when he is initiated by a spiritual master, then he becomes a dvija. That's what Prabhupada explains. So by person is born as a shudra, then by the performance of samskaras he is born again. Then when he approaches a spiritual master, he attains the second birth, and then he becomes a dvija. And then when he studies the scriptures under the guidance of the spiritual master, he becomes a vipra. And then when he makes further progress, then he becomes a Vaishnava. So he says that Vaishnava is a person who is a liberated Brahmana. So this is the, in order to come to the position of a Vaishnava, one has to go through all these stages. One has to undergo the samskaras, approach a spiritual master, and then study the Vedas, and becomes a vipra, and then comes to a Vaishnava. But in the case of Shukadeva Goswami, he was liberated right from the birth. The reason why Prabhupada is giving all these stages is that in order to explain the position of Shukadeva Goswami, who was liberated right from the birth itself. So then he says, any low-born person can be delivered to a highest transcendental position by the mercy of a Vaishnava. So then Shukadeva Goswami, because he was liberated right from the birth, he went towards the forest he didn't want to get entangled into the usual affairs. He went to the forest. Then Vyasadeva followed after him. So Prabhupada says, the son of the author of the Vedas was detached, but the author of the Vedas was attached. So Sukadeva Goswami was so detached, he actually right from the birth he went to the forest, but author of the Vedas, he seems to be attached. Of course, it's not that Vyasadeva is attached. In fact, Vyasadeva's attachment to Sukadeva Goswami, who is a pure devotee of the Lord, who is like an all-pervading super soul, who could actually affect the hearts of even the living entities like trees, is actually the perfection of a person. So Sukadeva Goswami was such a person that he could affect even the trees. Even the trees were feeling separation from Sukadeva Goswami. When Vyasadeva called out, "O son," the trees were actually facing Sukadeva Goswami, and the trees were also calling Sukadeva Goswami in with affection, "O son." Or the another meaning is that the trees were responding to Vyasadeva. One meaning is that trees were speaking to Sukadeva Goswami by calling out with affection, "O son." Another meaning is that the trees were speaking to Vyasadeva by saying, "O son." So they were telling to Vyasadeva that, why are you attached to your son? After all, who is a father and who is a son? Today he may be your son, but tomorrow somebody else may be your son. Tomorrow he may be your father. So why are you attached to this relationship? So in this way, they were actually, by calling out, "O son," to Sukadeva Goswami, to Vyasadeva, they were trying to remove the attachment of Vyasadeva towards Sukadeva Goswami. So apparently it appears that Vyasadeva is attached to Sukadeva Goswami. But this attachment of Vyasadeva or any personality towards a pure devotee of the Lord is actually, it is not a material illusion. In fact, it is the perfection of one's life. Dhruva Maharaj says in his prayers, "Tena smarant atitaram priyamisha martyam yechan vada suta sugrat griha vitta dara ye tvabjanaba bhavadiya padaravinda sauganda lubda hridayeshu krita prasanga." So Dhruva Maharaj says that when a person becomes attached to a devotee of the Lord who is in contact with the fragrance of the Lord's lotus feet, then such a person becomes detached from all family, wealth, relatives and etc. So Dhruva Maharaj is actually glorifying, "I want such attachment to a pure devotee of the Lord." So externally it appears that Vyasadeva was attached and Sukadeva Goswami is detached. But actually, Vyasadeva's attachment to Sukadeva Goswami is not material illusion. It is what we actually aspire for. So one Sri Vaishnavacharya says that there's something called as Nahi Ninda Nyay. Nahi Ninda Nyay means, sometimes in order to glorify a great person, that we may apparently criticize another great person in order to glorify a great person. So Sukadeva Goswami is apparently glorified by saying that how he is so detached. But apparently criticizing, "Oh, how Vyasadeva is attached." But actually Vyasadeva is also, was also in the liberated platform like Sukadeva Goswami. So Suta Goswami is actually glorifying Sukadeva Goswami like that. So the indication of actually the Suta Goswami's intent of intention of Suta Goswami is that Suta Goswami is feeling, just like Sukadeva Goswami entered the hearts of the trees. It is said that when Vyasadeva called out, "O son," so Sukadeva Goswami entered the hearts of these trees and responded to Vyasadeva. And entered the hearts of the trees and preached to Vyasadeva by saying that, "Why are you attached to your son? Why are you attached to these material relationships?" So Suta Goswami is feeling, just like Sukadeva Goswami entered the hearts of these dull trees, let that Sukadeva Goswami enter a dull person like me and speak Srimad Bhagavatam in order to answer the questions of these sages. So that is why he is offering obeisance to Shukadeva Goswami. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, so every speaker of the Srimad Bhagavatam should similarly offer obeisance to Shukadeva Goswami before actually speaking Srimad Bhagavatam. That praying to Shukadeva Goswami let him enter our heart so that he can actually speak Srimad Bhagavatam through us. So that is the mood of Suta Goswami in offering this particular prayer. So if you just compare this verse, in the sixth canto, in the Chitraketu Maharaj episode, when Chitraketu Maharaj lost his son, so Narada Muni and Angira Rishi came to preach to Chitraketu Maharaj. And first they preached to Chitraketu Maharaj, and then they revived the dead son, and then they made the dead son preach to Chitraketu Maharaj and all the queens of Chitraketu Maharaj. So the dead son was revived, and the dead son spoke that I have had so many fathers and mothers, and you are actually so much attached to me, but I have had so many fathers and mothers, why are you attached to me? These relationships are temporary. So Chitraketu, the dead son spoke the philosophy that he spoke something in order to remove the material illusion of Chitraketu Maharaj and all the queens of Chitraketu Maharaj. So there Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, there Angira Rishi actually entered the heart of that dead son and spoke through the dead son to the relatives of Chitraketu Maharaj. So there the relatives of Chitraketu Maharaj, they were actually in material illusion, they were attached to material relationships. So here, Vyasdev also, it appears that he is attached to his son, but it is not material illusion. So here Shukadeva Goswami entered the heart of the trees and spoke to Vyasdev the same philosophy which Angira Rishi spoke through the dead son to the relatives of Chitraketu Maharaj. But in the case of the relatives of Chitraketu Maharaj, they were actually in material illusion. But in this case, Vyasdev is not in material illusion, because his attachment to Shukadeva Goswami, it is on the spiritual platform. It is like an attachment to the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. So, this one thing. So, this principle, like sometimes we see that in English there is a term called as ventriloquism. So ventriloquism means that sometimes in a puppet show that the puppets are speaking, but actually somebody else is sitting near the puppet and he's speaking through the puppet. So it appears that the puppet is speaking, but actually somebody else is speaking through the puppet. So similarly here, it appears that the trees are speaking, but actually, in one sense, Shukadeva Goswami entered the hearts of the trees and he is speaking through the trees to Vyasdev. And Angira Rishi entered the heart of dead son and he spoke through the dead son to the relatives of Chitraketu Maharaj. So similarly, like sometimes in our own life also, that the spiritual master or maybe speaking through some other devotee. So when we are sincere, we can actually recognize the voice of the Supreme Lord or the spiritual master through that devotee. Just like Srila Prabhupada, when that postal peon told that you are writing so many magazines, but people may read the magazines and they throw away the magazines. So why are you spending so much of time writing magazines? Why don't you write books? And Prabhupada felt that is actually the spiritual master is speaking through this particular person. And he recognized the voice of the spiritual master and he actually started writing. So similarly, that sometimes the Lord or the devotees may speak through maybe sometimes even a new person or even a materialistic person. So when we are sincere, we can recognize that voice. So this is, in this way, Vyasdev is actually, Suta Goswami is glorifying Shukadeva Goswami in this verse. So we'll go to the next verse. Yahasvanubhavamakila shruti saramekam adhyatma deepamati tirshatam tamondam
சம்சாரிணாம் கருணயாக புராண குஹ்யம் தம் வியாச சூனுமுபயாமி குரு முனீனாம். So here he is again glorifying Shukadeva Goswami by saying that Shukadeva Goswami, who is the son of Vyasdev, he spoke Srimad Bhagavatam out of great compassion for all the living entities after personally assimilating the Srimad Bhagavatam. He spoke this confidential supplement of the cream of the Vedas, Akila Shruti Saram Ekam. He spoke this confident supplement of the cream of the Vedas after having personally assimilated by experience. So here it is said, Tam Vyasa Sunum. Vyasa Sunum means one is the son of Vyasdev. Tam Vyasa Sunum Upayami Guru Muninam. Guru Muninam. That means Shukadeva Goswami is the incomparable guru of all the sages. So he is actually glorifying Shukadeva Goswami by using different words. He is the son of Vyasdev and who is the guru of all the sages. Guru Muninam. In fact, when Shukadeva Goswami spoke Srimad Bhagavatam, there were personalities like Vyasdev, Narada Muni. They were his guru and param guru. They were all present and many elderly sages were present. So they actually heard Srimad Bhagavatam from Shukadeva Goswami as if they had not heard before. Usually we have eagerness when you have not heard something. We are actually eager to hear that. So the novelty of the subject matter usually makes a person eager. But here, for the case of Narada Muni and Vyasadev, the subject matter is not new for them. In fact, they themselves were actually like seasoned speakers. Narada Muni himself, he has preached to so many people. And Vyasadev, he has composed Srimad Bhagavatam. But they not only heard from Shukadeva Goswami, but they heard from Shukadeva Goswami as if they have not heard before. So what made them hear in such a way? What was it because of that they had this attitude that as they heard in such a way that as if they had not heard before? So that is because of the realization of Shukadeva Goswami. Or Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, it is the Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam made Shukadeva Goswami superior to all the other sages. Or because the Srimad Bhagavatam blessed Shukadeva Goswami, because of that, even such great sages like Vyasadeva and Narada Muni, they became eager to hear from Shukadeva Goswami. So in other words, the realization of Shukadeva Goswami that attracted all these sages to hear from Shukadeva Goswami in such a way as if they had not heard before. So His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj, he told in one class, why is it that all these sages choose to hear from Shukadeva Goswami? Because of two reasons. One reason is that because Shukadeva Goswami was madly in love with Krishna. And secondly, because Shukadeva Goswami had realization. So because of that, they chose to hear from Shukadeva Goswami, although he was just a 16-year-old person. So we see that, Prabhupada translates this verse is that Shukadeva Goswami personally realized it and then spoke Srimad Bhagavatam for the out of compassion for all living entities. So like knowing the height of Mount Everest, it is like having knowledge. But actually climbing on Mount Everest, it is like realizing it. Like one is knowing something, another is realizing it. So Shukadeva Goswami, because he had such realization and he was madly in love with Krishna, so all these sages chose to hear from him. And and another thing it's explained is that adhyatma deepam atitirshatam tamondam. Adhyatma deepam. So Shukadeva Goswami spoke the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is like adhyatma deepam, which is the lamp, which is like a lamp of transcendental knowledge. So in this way, in this verse, the first comparison of Srimad Bhagavatam being compared to a lamp, that is indicated in this particular verse. So it is said that atitirshatam tamondam. So atitirshatam means for those people who desire to cross the dense ignorance, tamo andam. For those who desire to cross the dense ignorance with great ease, atitirshatam tamondam. So for that purpose, Shukadeva Goswami spoke Srimad Bhagavatam. And for the pure devotees, Bhagavatam contains the essence of all the Shrutis, of all the Upanishads. And taking another meaning of Shruti, Bhagavatam is the essence for those who relish it with the ear of by hearing. In the sense, Srimad Bhagavatam, for those people who want to cross the dense darkness of ignorance, Bhagavatam will help, by which one can very easily cross the dense darkness of ignorance. And for the pure devotees who want to hear the essence of all the scriptures, Bhagavatam contains the essence of all the scriptures, because Bhagavatam is mentioned as Akila Shruti Saram Ekam. Akila Shruti Saram means it's the essence of all the Shrutis, or another meaning is that it is the essence of essence for those who relish it with the ear by hearing. Bhagavatam is the essence for those who relish it with the ear by hearing. So in this way, Shukadeva Goswami has been glorified here. So here we see that because Shukadeva Goswami received the blessings of Srimad Bhagavatam, he actually became the guru of even such great sages. So the power of blessings is that it actually reverses the hierarchy. Usually all these sages are actually superior to Shukadeva Goswami. They are all much elder to Shukadeva Goswami. But because of the blessings of Shukadeva Goswami, the hierarchy was reversed. Shukadeva Goswami, who is a grand disciple of Narada Muni, he became the guru of Narada Muni. Because of the blessing, because he received blessings of Bhagavatam. And so, like just like we see, like another place it is described, Yudhishthira Maharaj performed only 3 Rajasuya sacrifices, Ashwamedha sacrifice. But Indra performed 100 Ashwamedha sacrifices. But it is described that Yudhishthira Maharaj was as famous or even more famous than Indra. So usually 3 is less than 100. But 3 plus blessings of the Lord is greater than 100. So because Yudhishthira Maharaj had the blessings of Krishna, he was actually even more famous than Indra. So like that. Like when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked Mukunda Dutt, who is the father and who is the son? Is Raghunandan your father or is he your son? He said, Raghunandan is my father because of his devotional service, we are getting inspiration to perform devotional service. So, because of Raghunandan's devotional service, the hierarchy got reversed. So this is another thing which is indicated here. So next verse. Narayanam namaskritya naram chaiva narottamam devim sarasvatim vyasam tato jayamudirayet.
Is the very means of conquest. One should offer respect to the great
So every scripture has got these four things. One is the presiding deity where the scripture is written. And second is the devata which is being glorified in that particular scripture. And the third is the sage who has been entrusted with that particular scripture. And fourth is the Shakti, or as the the Shakti of the work. I don't know exactly, it just mentioned Shakti of the work. So there are four things involved in any particular scripture. So here Shukadeva Goswami, the Suta Goswami, is offering obeisances to these four personalities. Because he is going to speak Srimad Bhagavatam, he is offering obeisances to Naranarayan Rishi, who is the presiding deity of the place where Srimad Bhagavatam was written by Vyasadeva. And second, he offers obeisances to the devata of this particular book. Who is the person who is being glorified in this particular book? That is Krishna. So Krishna is indicated by the word Narottamam. And third, the Shakti of the work is Saraswati. And fourth is that he is offering obeisances to the sage who has been entrusted with the work, that is Vyasadeva. So Prabhupada writes here that this is the way of reciting the Puranas. The sense that anybody who actually, before speaking from the Puranas, one should actually recite this verse and offer obeisances to these four personalities before actually giving a discourse on the Srimad, the Puranas and the Srimad Bhagavatam. And here we see the way Prabhupada translates as, before reciting Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the very means of conquest, usually when you are ready for conquest, the mood of a person is that of displaying power. The mood is that of displaying power. But here, the mood is exactly opposite. The mood is that of humility. The speaker is actually offering obeisances to these personalities. So we'll go to the next verse.
Munayas sadhu prishtoham bhavadbirloka mangalam yatkrita krishna samprashno yenatma suprasidati.
So here Suta Goswami is actually, he is actually glorifying the sages also. The sages are the second question the sages asked is that, please tell the essence of the scriptures by which one will be completely satisfied. Yenatma suprasidati. If actually Vishnu Chakravartakur says, if you see the literal translation of this verse, what Suta Goswami is saying is that, simply by, he says that you have asked such good questions which is a beneficial for the whole world. Bhavadbir loka mangalam. You have asked questions which are beneficial for the whole world. And because they are beneficial for the whole world because they are related with Krishna. And Suta Goswami is saying, simply by asking such questions which are beneficial for the whole world, which are related with Krishna, one's intelligence will be satisfied. So in one sense, he is giving the exact answer in the next verse, but he is actually he is also giving an answer in this particular verse. How can the soul can be completely satisfied? How can intelligence can be completely satisfied? For that he says that simply by asking such questions on the subject matter of Krishna, which are beneficial for the whole world, simply by asking such questions, one will be completely satisfied. So in that sense, in fact, even the second canto, the beginning of the second canto also, when Parikshit Maharaj asked question at the end of the first canto, Parikshit Maharaj asked a question to Shukadeva Goswami, what a person should hear, chant and remember in order to attain success, and what one should not hear, chant and remember, what one should do and what one should not do in order to attain success. When Shukadeva Goswami answered the question, he also answered in the same way in which Suta Goswami is answering here. Sukadeva Goswami said, Variyan Yeshate Prashna Krita Loka Hitam Drupa Atma Vit Sammata Pumsam Shota Vyadishu Yahapara. He said that Variyan Yeshate Prashna, you asked such a best question. This question itself is the best subject matter for hearing, chanting and remembering. Simply by hearing, chanting and remembering your question, a person will attain success. So that's what Vishnu Chakravartakur says, that Parshit Maharaj's question, like he is asking an answer saying like what one should do and what one should not do in order to attain success. But Shukadeva Goswami is saying that simply by hearing, chanting and remembering your question, one will attain success. So similarly, Suta Goswami is saying simply by asking such questions about Krishna, one's intelligence will be completely satisfied. So that is why Rupa Goswami, in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, out of the 64 items of sadhana bhakti, one of the items of sadhana bhakti is that inquiring about Krishna. I think the fifth or sixth item is that inquiry about spiritual subject matters. So that simply inquiring about spiritual subject matters, that itself is an item of bhakti. So like if a person simply inquires sincerely about subject matter of Krishna, even if you don't have the answers, by that inquiry itself, you are connecting yourself with Krishna. You are performing devotional service. So here Prabhupada writes a purport that he says that he explains that how, like, in fact, the whole world is filled with questions and answers. Right from the morning, if we get up, we have questions and answers. Should I get up or not? Should I? So, like, it's filled with questions and answers. Magazines and newspaper, it's all filled with questions and answers. But the best questions have already been asked in the scriptures. And the answers to those questions have also been given in the scriptures. So if we simply take advantage of these best questions and answers, one will actually attain success. So to that extent, Prabhupada actually writes in the purport. So we'll go to the next verse. Savai pumsam paro dharmo yato bhaktir adokshaje akaituki apratihata yayatma suprasidati. So here he is giving an answer by saying that the soul will be completely satisfied when a person renders unmotivated and uninterrupted devotional service to Krishna. And this is actually supreme occupational duty of a living entity. Savai pumsam paro dharmo yato bhaktir adokshaje. So Prabhupada writes here in the purport that he talks about Pravritti Marga and the Nivritti Marga. Pravritti Marga is the path of progressive material enjoyment, and Nivritti Marga is the path of renunciation. And in the case of Pravritti Marga, he says it is temporary, illusory and miserable. But Nivritti Marga leads to eternal, blissful and all cognizant life. But even when a person practices Nivritti Marga, even when a person practices devotional service, one may practice devotional service for some material gain. Because enjoyment, he says that adopting devotional service for some material gain, because enjoyment in material condition of life only aggravates the symptoms of disease and its duration.
So one may even perform devotional service for material gain, but that will actually, when we are interested in material gain, that will only aggravate the disease and its symptoms. So then he explains that the living entity's sustenance of existence is to coordinate one's activities with his eternal relation with the Supreme Lord. So then he makes a very beautiful statement. What is that relationship with the Supreme Personality of God? So living entity, when a person, when he connects, when he establishes relationship with the Supreme Lord, then he can actually be completely satisfied. So what is the relationship with the Supreme Lord? So he says it is the relationship of the servant and the served. And usually when we hear this word servant and the served, we hear, that means like the person whom we are serving, he will actually try to exploit us. But that is the experience of all of us with the bosses in this material world. But here it is explained, Prabhupada says, but this relationship of the servant and served with the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the most congenial form of intimacy. It is unlike the relationship with the material bosses of this world. It is actually the most congenial form of intimacy. Then how can a person realize this relationship with Krishna? He says that everyone should engage himself in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, even in the present conditioned state. One can realize it as the devotional services progresses. So in the beginning, we may not have realization how this relationship is that of a congenial form of intimacy. But as we continue to practice devotional service, one can realize that how it is the most congenial form of intimacy. So here Prabhupada says, Ahaituki apratihata yayatma suprasidati. So one will be completely satisfied when we perform devotional service without any motivation and without any interruption. So when we see that when we feel dissatisfaction in our life, so we have to introspect. It could be because we were performing devotional service with some motivation, or because of some interruption in devotional service. So to the extent the devotional service performed with some motivation, then to that extent one will not feel the complete satisfaction. And to the extent devotional service is motivated, to that extent devotional service will be interrupted. How can a person, in another purport Prabhupada explains, a person can perform uninterrupted devotional service, so only when he is unmotivated. So why one is not able to perform uninterrupted devotional service is that because one is having different motivations. So, and another important point, which is also brought here by the word ahaituki apratihata. So ahaituki apratihata, one meaning is that devotional service should be performed without any motivation, ahaituki, and without any interruption, apratihata, in order to completely satisfy the self. But another meaning of the same two words is that ahaituki means devotional service is not caused by anything other than itself. In other words, devotional service has no external cause. It is caused only, it is caused by bhakti only. Ahaituki. And apratihata means devotional service can be performed in any circumstance. It cannot be interrupted by any external material situation. So that is like another meaning of the word apratihata. So that is why Vishnu Chakotaku says, when he translates this verse, Savai Pumsam Paro Dharma, he says, the supreme occupational, the supreme dharma for all human beings is that by which prema bhakti to the Lord is awakened, and which is not caused by anything other than itself, and which cannot be obstructed, and which satisfies the mind completely. So ahaituki, another meaning is that devotional service is not caused by anything other than itself. Like for example, the sixth canto, when Indra was fighting with Vritrasur. So Indra was getting defeated in the battle. He lost his club. He actually threw his club. But Vritrasur very easily destroyed the club into pieces. Then Indra was completely morose. And he lost the enthusiasm to fight. That time Vritrasur starts actually preaching to Indra. He says that you take that thunderbolt, and thunderbolt will definitely, that will not actually meet with failure. Unlike the club, it will not meet with failure because it has been invested with the power of Krishna. And then he was actually giving inspiration to Indra to actually fight, continue to fight. And he spoke, then Vritrasur, seeing that Indra was still not willing to fight, Vritrasur actually he offered prayer to the Lord. He spoke the Chatushloki Bhagavatam, Aham Hetava Padaika Mulu. So when Vritrasur was speaking all these verses, Indra was completely astonished because he did not expect such a devotional discourse from a demon like Vritrasur. And he was completely astonished. And that was the first emotion which he went through. And then after that, after getting astonished, then his astonishment vanished. He started smiling because he felt, oh, even there are great devotees like Prahlad Maharaj, although they are born in the family of demons, but they are actually pure devotees of the Lord. So it can be possible that although he may be a demon, but he may be a pure devotee. So remembering Prahlad Maharaj's astonishment vanished. But and then when the astonishment vanished, but again he became astonished. Why he again became astonished? Because he was thinking, in the case of Prahlad Maharaj, he became a pure devotee because he got the association of Narada Muni. So because of the association of Narada Muni, he got actually, he became a pure devotee. But in the case of Vritrasur, there doesn't seem to be any such association with some pure devotees. So how did he become a devotee? So because of that, he became again astonished. So why I'm telling this story is that, because Indra knew that devotional service, if Vritrasur is becoming such a great devotee, that means it has to be caused by getting association of another devotee. Association of another devotee is actually, it is an item of bhakti. So bhakti can be caused by bhakti only. So he felt, in the case of Vritrasur, there is no information how he got the association of some other devotee. Because he did not know the past life story of Chitraketu Maharaj. How he got the association of Narada Muni and became a devotee. So the point is that bhakti can be caused only by bhakti. Or prachetas, they say, vayam tu sakshat bhagavan bhavasya priyasya sakyur kshana sangamena. So prachetas, they offer praise to Lord Vishnu. They say that we have got your association because we got the association of Lord Shiva previously. So we got the association of Lord Shiva because of his association, we have got your darshan. Means like bhakti can be caused only by bhakti. Even Ajamil, when he actually came to his senses, when he started repenting after hearing the conversation between Yamadutas and Vishnudutas, then he was thinking, so I must have performed some past devotional activities, because of that I got the association of such Vishnudutas, elevated personalities, because of that I was able to chant the holy names. So bhakti can be caused only by bhakti. So ahaituki and apratihata means devotional service cannot be obstructed by any circumstance. So in the case of other processes, they have a different cause. For example, the cause of practicing karma is beginningless ignorance. And the cause of practicing jnana is that even a person practices nishkama karma, then that becomes the cause of practicing the jnana marga. But the cause for practicing bhakti is that association of devotees which is actually nothing but bhakti only, because association of devotees is actually an anga of bhakti. And other processes, the process of karma, jnana or yoga, they depend on so many material circumstances. In order to practice jnana marga or ashtanga yoga, you have to go to a secluded place. You have to practice jnana marga, you have to take sannyas. But bhakti, Prabhupada writes in one purport, even prostitutes can also practice devotional service. So Jiva Goswami, he writes in his Bhakti Sandarbha, he says that bhakti can be practiced in all places. He gives so many different quotations to establish how bhakti can be practiced in all places by using all the senses, by using all types of objects, and by all types of actions, and by performing all prescribed duties, and by using all type of results. And then he mentions, bhakti can be practiced in the beginning of creation, and during the all four types of annihilation, and in all the four yugas. And then he says that at all times and in all stages of life. So for that he says, bhakti can be practiced even in the womb. He gives the example of Prahlad Maharaj. And bhakti can be practiced even as a child, as Dhruva Maharaj. And bhakti can be practiced in a old age, Dhritarashtra. Bhakti can be practiced just before death, Ajamil. And bhakti can be practiced after death in heavenly planets. The example is Chitraketu Maharaj. So in that sense, Ahaituki Apratihata means that there cannot be any excuse for not practicing bhakti. For other processes, there can be some excuse. But for bhakti, there cannot be any excuse. So the material circumstances, material world may make us helpless on the physical platform, but they cannot make us helpless in the platform of consciousness. So material world may make us helpless on the physical platform, in the sense like when you are lying in the hospital bed, you may not be able to chant the holy names or hear Srimad Bhagavatam, etc. But still you can practice bhakti by desiring to do that. By offering prayers, by remembering the Lord. In the sense, to practice bhakti, there cannot be any excuse. Nothing can come as an obstacle for practicing bhakti. So, ahaituki apratigata yayatma suprasidati. So, one may say, by practicing sadhana bhakti, a person comes to the stage of bhava bhakti. Bhaktya sanjataya bhaktya bibarth utpulakam tanum. By practicing sadhana bhakti, a person comes to the stage of bhava bhakti. So that means sadhana bhakti becomes the cause of bhava bhakti. Then one may say that bhava bhakti is caused by something. But that is like unripe mango is the cause of ripe mango. So in that sense, unripe mango is the cause of ripe mango. That unripe mango is like same mango only. So similarly, when we say association of devotees is the cause of bhakti, that association of devotees is also bhakti, is an item of bhakti only. We are not contradicting the principle that bhakti is caused by something else. Because association of devotees is an item of bhakti, it does not contradict the statement that bhakti is not caused by anything other than itself. So we'll go to the next verse.
Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojitah Janayatyashu Vairagyam Jnanam Chayadahaitukam.
So here, in this verse, Suta Goswami describes he gives a positive statement to say that how when you practice bhakti, what benefit you will get. He says that one will automatically develop knowledge and detachment. One will develop knowledge and detachment. So here Prabhupada says in the purport, so many times people think that devotional service is like a material emotional affair. And it is meant for some less intelligent people like Shudras, Vaishyas, or women. But here it is explained, Prabhupada gives a counter argument by saying, Bhakti cult is the topmost of all transcendental activities because it is sublime for the pure devotees who want to get in contact with the Lord, and it is easy for the neophytes who are just on the threshold of the house of devotional service. So that means bhakti is actually, bhakti can be practiced by right from the neophyte practitioner to the highest practitioner. So usually in a coaching class, like sometimes in a certain coaching class, like for IITs and all, certain coaching classes, in order to take people for their coaching classes, they conduct entrance exam. Before actually entering the coaching classes for joining IIT, you have to write entrance exam to join the coaching class. And then after joining, based on the marks in the entrance exam, they put in different groups because they feel that somebody was scoring high marks and somebody was scoring less marks. When we are teaching, so some people may not be able, actually, they may not be able to relate with, like some people who are like very highly intelligent, if you speak something very basic, they may get bored. And for something for beginners, if you speak something very high, then they may get actually carried away. They may not be able to understand. So they make in different groups. So that may be true in the case of mundane subjects, but in the case of devotional service, the process of devotional service, that it is actually sublime for the pure devotees and it is also easy for the neophytes. Of course, like when you are preaching Krishna consciousness, we may try to have a different, for newcomers, we may address separately, and then more serious separately, etc., in order to nurture them. But the process of devotional service is actually sublime for the pure devotees and also easy for the neophytes. In that way, that is the topmost of all transcendental activities. So it is the greatness of bhakti that although it is a great science, it is open for all living beings. It is open for all living beings. So then, and another thing which Prabhupada writes in the purport is that, so when we say bhakti leads to detachment and knowledge, when we talk about detachment, one becomes detached from all material goals. It is not that a person becomes detached from Krishna. So Prabhupada says, negation of the non-essentials does not mean negation of the essentials. Means like, a person becomes detached from material goals, but one does not become detached from Krishna. And when it is mentioned that bhakti produces knowledge, it means that knowledge of the Lord devoid of desire for liberation. Usually, knowledge of the absolute truth, it produces desire for liberation. When a person gets knowledge of the impersonal Brahman, he develops a desire for liberation. But by practicing bhakti, a person gets knowledge of the Lord devoid of the desire for liberation. It's like that. So, on the other hand, if we see, when a person may be renounced, but a person may have knowledge, but if he is not practicing devotional service, that knowledge will not lead to detachment. A person may have knowledge that smoking is injurious to health. But although he has the knowledge, but that knowledge does not lead to detachment because he is not having a higher taste of practicing devotional service. But by practicing bhakti, even without knowledge and detachment, even without the preliminary knowledge and detachment, that bhakti will lead to knowledge and detachment. Like for two, three examples from the Bhagavatam. Like for example, one famous example, the story of Madan Mohan Malviya. So he came to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur to ask a question. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur told that, why don't you help these pujaris in washing pots? And he helped the pujaris in washing pots, and then he came to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur And Saraswati Thakur asked that, can you tell me what is your question? And he said, my questions are already answered. Like practicing bhakti, he got the knowledge. He got his questions were answered. Or if you see the prayers of Nagapatnis in the 10th canto, the Nagapatnis offered prayers to Krishna. That is one of the highly philosophical prayers. Very highly philosophical prayers are that. So usually, snakes are considered to be like very envious creatures. And even the snakes, Nagapatnis are female snakes. Usually, in general, like women, they can't hear a lot of philosophy. And even in that, like female snakes, how they were offering such highly philosophical prayers? So because of their actually bhakti. So that bhakti led to that knowledge. Or another example, from the 4th canto, Queen Archi. So Queen Archi, when she performed, when Prithu Maharaj went to the forest to perform austerities, Queen Archi was assisting her husband in performing austerities. So it is described that Queen Archi, she was also performing austerities so severely that she was practicing austerities like a sage by eating roots and fruits. Like, usually, again, Prabhupada writes in the purport, like women, they are not used to performing austerities like a sage in the forest. The bodily tendency is that they seek comfort. But here Queen Archi, she was performing austerities, such severe austerities in the forest. And moreover, she was actually a princess. She was the queen of Prithu Maharaj. She was not used to it. And she was performing austerities. And her body grew thin, but she was not at all unhappy. So how is it that? Because she considered that serving her husband as a great privilege. She considered the service to Prithu Maharaj, a great devotee of the Lord, as a great privilege. That means because of bhakti towards Prithu Maharaj, that produced detachment in Archi, that although she was growing thin, and she was performing so much, such severe austerities that she did not feel unhappy. So this is an example of how bhakti led to detachment. So next verse, dharma swanishtita pumsam vishvaksena katasuya notpatayet yatiratim shramayeva hi kevalam. So here, Suta Goswami gives a negative statement in the sense like, if you do not practice bhakti, or if you do not develop attraction for hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord, then even if you perform all the occupational duties perfectly, it is a useless labor. It is of useless labor. So Prabhupada says, occupational activity depends on one's conception of life. Then he gives three categories of people: gross materialists, mental speculators, and salvationists. Depending on their conception, they engage in different activities. And then he explains that all three types of people will not achieve satisfaction of the self because they have no information of the self, soul, and how it is beyond the purview of the body and mind. So here he is making such a strong statement, shrama yevahi kevalam. So, if a person does not develop attraction for hearing and chanting, it is a useless labor, shrama, and it is only useless labor, eva, and he, certainly it is a useless labor, and kevalam, it is entirely useless labor. So, a very strong statement. So next verse, we'll go to the next verse. Dharmasya khyapa vargyasya narto artaya pakalpate nartasya dharmai kantasya kamalabaya hi smritaha.
All occupational engagements are certainly useless,
So here he explains that the goal of practicing dharma is that it should be ultimate liberation, and it is not artha. And if at all you have to use artha, then you should not use it for sense gratification. So most people perform occupational duty for material gain. In fact, even the Vedas allure on with material gain. But one should actually practice dharma for ultimate liberation, not for artha. And then Sutta Goswami says that, but then how is it possible to, a person may have many material desires. So because of that, a person practices dharma in order to get artha so that he can enjoy material desires. So how is it possible to control one's material desires? How can we remain focused in cultivating dharma for ultimate liberation without being disturbed by artha and kama? So it is mentioned one should practice dharma for ultimate liberation. So when a person has so many material desires, how can you remain focused in practicing dharma for the ultimate liberation without being disturbed by artha and kama? So for that he answers in the next verse. Kamasya nendriya pritir labo jiveta yavata jivasya tatva jignyasa narto yascheha karma bihi. So here it is explained, jivasya tattva jignyasa. That means, when a person is focused on inquiring about the absolute truth, then automatically, the desires for sense gratification, they will become regulated. So Prabhupada writes here, in all spheres of life, the ultimate end is only sense gratification. Whether it is politics or social service or altruism or even religion, ultimately people are interested in sense gratification. And then he says, one should satisfy the senses only in so much as required for self-preservation and not for sense gratification. And he says that body is actually made of the senses. So the senses definitely require some satisfaction. Certain amount of satisfaction. He is not denying that senses don't require any satisfaction. Senses certainly require certain amount of satisfaction, but one should actually satisfy the senses only in so much as required for self-preservation. But then one may say, how can a person just gratify the senses only that much is required and not overdo, not overeat or say oversleep or overindulgence? So that is possible when a person is focused in jivasya tattva jignyasa. He says, like, marriage is necessary, but it is not meant for sense gratification. He explains that when there is no voluntary restraint, then people have to actually force family planning. They have to make so much propaganda about family planning. They have to talk about contraceptive methods because there is no voluntary restraint. And when can there be voluntary restraint? When there is a focus on jivasya tattva jignyasa. Or in other words, what Prabhupada writes in the purport is that spiritual inquiry and regulation are connected. When we are focused on spiritual inquiry, automatically one's life will become regulated. So there is one classic statement of Prabhupada here. I will read this statement. Seekers of the absolute truth are never allured by unnecessary engagements in sense gratification, because the serious students seeking the absolute truth are always overwhelmed with the work of researching the truth. Because they are always overwhelmed with the work of researching the truth, they are never allured by unnecessary engagements in sense gratification. So he is saying, that means if a person makes self-realization as the main project of life, then automatically the regulation will take place. So then the next verse, so in this verse he talked about jivasya tatva jignyasa. One should inquire about the absolute truth. So what is that absolute truth? So that is described in the next verse. Vadanti tat tatvavidas tatvam yadgyana madvayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavan iti shabdyate. So here, the absolute truth is described by learned transcendentalists as Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan. You will see always in the Bhagavatam, this culture of like Tattva Vidaha, the culture of quoting others. Like learned people say, Shukadeva Goswami himself is a learned person, but he is actually quoting. Like, learned people say the absolute truth is actually described in terms of Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan. So, like Kapila Dev gives an example in the third canto. He says that just like milk. Milk is perceived by different senses in different ways. So the eyes perceive the milk as white. Something, some white substance. And nose perceives the milk as something which is fragrant. And tongue perceives the milk as sweet. And maybe the skin perceives the milk as something cool. And ear perceives the milk as that it is milk. But the mind, which is the king among all the senses, perceives the milk with all its qualities. So the different other senses, they perceive only one of the qualities of the milk. So eye perceives only the quality of the white color of the milk. Nose perceives only the fragrance of the milk. So the different senses perceive only different qualities, but the mind, which is the king of all the senses, perceives all the qualities of the milk. So then he says, so similarly, the supreme absolute truth has got different features, Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan. But other processes like karma, jnana and yoga, they only, by practicing those processes, one can only realize some aspect of the absolute truth. But by practicing bhakti, one can realize all the aspects of the absolute truth. So, next verse. So, in the next verse, he tells the process to realize that tattva. The process to realize the tattva. Tashaddadana munayo jnana vairagya yuktaya pashyantyatmani chatmanam bhaktya shrutagrihitaya. So in this verse, I was hearing Gaurangpur, he was explaining this verse from Bhakti Sandarbha. He was telling that this verse also tells that how bhakti is rare. The process of bhakti is rare because in this verse, five qualifications are mentioned. Qualification of transcendentalists to understand the absolute truth. Five qualities are mentioned. The first quality is Shraddha Dana. So usually Shraddha Dana means one who is faithful. But Prabhupada here translates Shraddha Dana as one who is seriously inquisitive. Means like when a person is having an open-minded inquiry, even that is also considered, that is also appreciated, that is also considered to be faithful. Shraddha Dana. And the second quality which is mentioned is Munaya. Munaya means thoughtful. So tat shraddha dana munaya means, so one has to be thoughtful and also faithful. So usually that these two qualities are actually very rare to have. One has to be faithful and thoughtful. Then one purport, Prabhupada writes that a devotee is as thoughtful as a non-devotee is speculative. A devotee is as thoughtful as a non-devotee is speculative. A devotee is thoughtful before choosing a spiritual master. He is thoughtful as to whom he should choose as a spiritual master. Which path I should follow. But after choosing the particular spiritual master, then we are not thoughtful about should I follow him or not. A devotee is thoughtful about how I can best serve him, how I can best execute this particular instruction. So for that purpose he is thoughtful. But a person should be always thoughtful. So before accepting the right path, one should be thoughtful about which path to choose. And after accepting the right path, one should be thoughtful as to how to best execute, how to best follow this particular path, how to best execute service to the Lord. So Shraddha, Dana and Munaya. The example given for being thoughtful is that Lord Brahma. So Lord Brahma, it is explained, the second canto, Bhagavan Brahma Katsyena Trir Anviksha Manishaya Tad Adhyavasyat Kutastu Ratir Atman Yato Bhavet. So Lord Brahma studied the Vedas 3 times scrutinizingly with full concentration, and then he came to the conclusion that attraction to the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the ultimate goal of the Vedas, conclusion of the Vedas. When he studied first time, he actually came to the conclusion that Karma Kanda section, karma, the path of karma is conclusion. But he was not satisfied. Then he studied for the second time, then he came to the conclusion that Jnana is the real path. Still he was not satisfied. Then he studied for the third time, then he came to the conclusion that Bhakti is the conclusion of the Vedas. So Lord Brahma is an example of a person how he was actually thoughtful and how he studied the Vedas. And the third qualification which is explained is Shruta Grihitaya. Shruta Grihitaya means we have to follow in the footsteps of the previous acharyas, or one should actually study the scriptures. So Prabhupada writes in the purport that a sincere devotee must therefore be prepared to hear the Vedic literatures like Upanishads, Vedanta and other literatures left by the previous authorities for his progress. Without hearing such literatures, one cannot make actual progress. And then another 2 qualities which are described is Jnana and Vairagya. And then another important word is that Pashyanti Atmani Chatmanam. Pashyanti Atmani Chatmanam means, it is explained that we should be able to correlate what goes in our life with what is there in Shastra. And we should be able to correlate what is in Shastra with what goes on in our life. Means like when we are seeing different, observing different incidents in the world, we should be able to correlate with what is there in the Shastra. And we should be able to correlate what is there in Shastra with what goes on in the world. That is what it means, Pashyanti Atmani Chatmanam. So, because to have the combination of all these things is very rare. Shraddha Dana, Munayo, Shruta Grihitaya, Jnana, Vairagya and Pashyanti Atmani Chatmanam. So, because of these reasons, Bhakti is very rare. So, this is some another explanation given by Shri Jiva Goswami. So we'll go to the next verse. One may say, if bhakti is very rare, it may be very difficult. So then in the 13th verse it is explained, bhakti is also easy. Atapumbir dvijasreshta varna shrama vibhagashah swanishtitasya dharmasya samsiddhir haritoshanam. So here it is said, yeah, in one sense it explained that if a person simply by performing performing one's prescribed duties as an offering to Krishna, one should perform on prescribed duties for the purpose of pleasing the Lord. The purpose of all the performing one's duties of varna and ashram is actually ultimately to please the Lord. So sometimes a person becomes so much absorbed in performing one's duties that he forgets the purpose of those duties is to please the Lord. And sometimes a person concentrates only on our devotional service that we actually neglect our duties in this world according to one varna and ashram. So one has to have a balance of our duties and also devotional service. Just like, should I give this example? Like suppose when a person is acting in a drama, somebody is acting in a Jagai Madai drama. So a person is acting as, say, Jagai Madai. So he has to act like he has to actually throw the stone at Nityanand Prabhu. But he feels that, how can I actually throw stone at Nityanand Prabhu? He is actually my counselor. So instead of throwing at a stone, he puts a garland. So it's not like when you are acting in a drama, you have to actually play the role what is required. Or another extreme is, a person becomes so much absorbed in the role, he actually drinks a whiskey and acts as Jagai and Madai. Actually, so that means like one extreme is being too indifferent to the role. Another extreme is like too much absorption in the role. So similarly, sometimes a person becomes too much absorbed in the roles of varna and ashram that one executes one's duties perfectly, but he forgets the point that the purpose of all these duties is to ultimately please the Lord, and becomes too much absorbed in the role that he forgets that it is just a drama. It is just a temporary role I have to play, but my real role is to actually please the Lord. I am a servant of Krishna. And another extreme is that we become so much focused on devotional service that we neglect our duties which has to be performed in this world. We become indifferent to the roles in this world. So then that also leads to a problem, because that will not lead to a stable family. When we do not practice the duties of varna and ashram properly, then we'll not be able to create a proper legacy for the next generation. So one has to perform one's duties along with devotional service. So the purpose of performing the duties is to please the Lord. So next verse.
तस्मादेकेन मनसा भगवान् स्वात्वतांपतिः श्रोतव्य कीर्तितव्यश्च देय पूज्यस्य नित्यदा.
So the previous verse described that atapumbir jya shreshta varnashrama vibhagasha swanishtritasya. Swanishtritasya means by perfect execution of varnashram duties. Or one may say, but one may think that means like I have to perfectly execute varnashram duties in order to please Krishna. So then a person, by hearing the word swanishtritasya, one may focus more on performing one's varnashram duties. But to perfectly perform the duties of varna and ashram, it is very difficult. So in this verse it is explained that instead of actually focusing so much on it is not possible to perform perfectly the varnashram duties in Kali Yuga, and one may not be able to understand all the principles of varnashram. So therefore it's not possible to achieve haritoshanam by doing perfect performance of varnashram duties. So instead of that, one can concentrate on doing four things, that is shrotavya, kirtitavya, deya pujyascha nityada, hearing, chanting, remembering and worshipping the Lord. So in the next verse Sutta Goswami is giving emphasis to these four activities. If we concentrate on these four activities, one can actually please, with one pointed attention, one should actually perform these four activities of hearing, chanting, remembering and worshipping the Lord. Anybody has any questions or anything they will share? So, Swanishtitasya means performing prescribed duties perfectly. Offering the fruits to Vishnu. So in this purport, in the 14th verse purport, Prabhupada says that all, like, even an insignificant man becomes an important man simply by these activities of hearing and glorifying. Anybody becomes a very important man if we hear about him by glorifying him. So Prabhupada says that even an unqualified man can bring about no good either for the particular man or for the society. An unqualified man can bring about no good either for the particular man or for the society. So the tendency to glorify others or hear others must be turned to the real object of glorification, that the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that will bring one happiness. And then the 15th verse, Suta Goswami says, so one may say that I have no experience of glorifying somebody. I have no experience of worshipping somebody. One may say like that. Suta Goswami says, so even if you don't experience of glorifying or worshipping, just concentrate on hearing about Krishna. So therefore he says, Yadanudyasina yukta karma granti nibandhanam chindanti kovidastasya kona kuryat kataratim. So by remembering the Lord, one can cut the bondage of karma. So therefore, who will not pay attention to his message, or who will not hear about him? So kona kuryat kataratim. So here the remembrance of the Lord acts like a sword. So in the next verse, from the 17th to 21st verse, in 5 verses, he gives 14 stages by which a person progresses. So in the 16th verse he talked about, he gave emphasis to hearing about the Lord. Kona kuriyat kata ratim. So one may say, but then I don't have an eagerness for hearing about the Lord. So then Suta Goswami is saying, if you don't have an eagerness, then when you start serving the devotees, you will develop an eagerness to hear about the Lord. So then when you serve the devotees, you will develop an eagerness, and then how you can progress. He gives a 14 stages starting from the 17th verse. Shrinvatam swakata krishna punya shravana kirtanaha hridyantasto hya badrani vidunoti suhrutsatam. Missed one verse. Susrusha Shraddha Dhanasya Vasudeva Katharichi Syan Mahat Seveya Vipra Punyatita Nishevana. So in this verse, starting from this verse, Suta Goswami says the first stage is when a person gets the mercy of the devotees. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur tells in one purport of the particular verse, the 14 stages by which a person advances. First, when a person gets the mercy of the devotees, then he serves the devotees. When a person serves the devotees, then he develops a faith. And when he develops a faith, then he surrenders to the feet of the Guru. And when he surrenders to the feet of the Guru, then he develops a desire to hear from the Guru. And when a person develops a desire to hear, then he gets a taste for those topics. So these are the 6 stages which are mentioned in this particular verse, 16th verse. In the 17th verse, it's explained, Shrinvatam Swakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana. And when a person hears with taste, then what happens? The next stage, the seventh stage is that Anartha Nivritti takes place. Hridayantastok Abhadrani Vidunoti Sukhrit Satam. Krishna cleanses all the Abhadras from within the heart. So this particular verse is a very important verse. Shrinvatam Swakata Krishna. So if you see, in Kali Yuga, the prominent problem is actually the relationship problems. And which is mainly because of the anarthas like lust, greed, anger, envy. And which is coming from the lower modes, passion and ignorance. And the solution to remove the passion and ignorance is one has to hear about Krishna. So many times, when we talk about Krishna Katha, people say, like, why don't you tell something practical for relationship problems? But actually, Krishna Katha is the real practical solution for all the relationship problems. Because when we give proper oral reception to Krishna Katha, then the lower modes get eradicated. So then a person can actually, and the problems will get solved. So, if we see this particular verse, Prabhupada quotes in the Bhagavad Gita 7th chapter, 1st verse, purport. So, when Arjuna says in the 18th chapter, Nashta Moho Smritir Ladva Tvat Prasadat Mayachuta Karishye Vachanam Tava, says, now I will do whatever you say. So, because my illusion is gone and my doubts are dispelled. So, there are two obstacles for surrendering to Krishna. Illusion and doubts. And what is the predominant illusion? The predominant illusion is the bodily concept of life. So therefore, the maximum number of verse, maximum number of times, the verse which is quoted by Prabhupada for the maximum number of times is the verse Dehi Nosmin Yata Dehi, which talks about the bodily concept of life. And the second obstacle for surrendering to Krishna is Sitosmi Gata Sandeha, doubts. And how to eradicate doubts? Krishna explains the 7th chapter, Maya Sakta Manapartha Yogam Yunjan Madashraya. Simply by hearing from me, your doubts will be gone. The solution for eradicating doubts is actually hearing from Krishna and hearing about Krishna. So that's why the maximum number of lectures which Prabhupada chose to give on any particular verse of Bhagavad Gita is actually 7.1. So in that verse, we see like Prabhupada giving emphasis to these two verses, he is actually targeting on these two obstacles for surrendering to Krishna. Bodily concept of life and the doubts, by giving emphasis to hearing and we are not the body, we are the soul. So in that 7.1 purport, Prabhupada talks about, quotes this verse, Shrinvatam Swakata Krishna. So the way Prabhupada translates this verse is that, one place Prabhupada translates as, when a person develops a urge to hear Krishna Katha, then Krishna actually purifies a person from within the heart. So developing a urge to hear, it's like Lord Shiva, when he came to know there is a Bhagavad Katha which is going to happen in the Hamsa Vahan. So Lord Shiva was coming in from his bull carrier, but he felt that bull carrier was very slow. They left the bull carrier and he took up the Hamsa as the carrier, and then he came to the, because he didn't want to miss a single point in the class. So urge to hear, when a person develops an urge to hear, then Krishna actually purifies from within the heart. Or another place Prabhupada translates this verse as, Krishna purifies the anarthas of a person who relishes his message. So relishing his message means, one devotee was sharing this point, was saying that the difference between advanced devotee and a person who is not advanced is that the advanced devotee, he is happy while chanting Hare Krishna and while hearing Krishna Katha. And one is less advanced, he is happy after he completes the chanting and after the class is over. I'm just mentioning that. So here is explained. So these are the two ways Prabhupada actually translates. One who relishes the message, Krishna actually purifies the heart from within, or one who develops the urge to hear. So then what is the next thing which happens? Nashta prayesh abhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavatir uttam ashloke bhaktir bhavati naishtiki. So, I'll just read few more points of Prabhupada in the purport. The Prabhupada writes in the previous purports, by serving the servants of the Lord, one becomes qualified to hear the glories of the Lord. And the eagerness to hear about God is the first qualification of a devotee eligible for entering the kingdom of God. As the first qualification for a devotee entering the kingdom of God. And then, in the previous 17th verse purport, so Prabhupada explains that very few people desire to go back to Godhead, and Krishna helps them in all respects whoever desires so. And then he mentions the qualification to go back to Godhead is that one should be free from sins. But the sins, the sins are byproducts of one's desire to lord it over material nature. And then he explains, the most difficult desires are desire for women and desire for wealth. Because even many stalwarts fell victim to them. Then he makes another beautiful statement. He says, to become restless in the contact of women and wealth is not an astonishment because of association since time immemorial. It takes time to recover from this foreign nature. But if one is engaged in hearing the glories of the Lord, gradually he realizes his real position. And by the grace of the Lord, such a devotee gets sufficient strength to defend himself from the state of disturbances, and gradually all disturbing elements are eliminated from his mind. Now in the 18th verse he says, from anartha nivritti a person comes to the stage of nishta. Bhaktir bhavati naishtiki. Nashta prayesh abhadreshu. Nashta prayeshu means when almost all the anarthas are destroyed. Means like when almost all, may not be all the anarthas are not destroyed. Prayeshu means when when they are almost completely destroyed, then a person comes to the stage of nishta. So next verse. Tada rajastamo bhava kama lobadayaschaye chetaye tair anaviddam sitam sattve prasidati. So this verse, from the stage of nishta, a person comes to the stage of ruchi and asakti. So that is explained. So Vishnu Chakotaku says that tada rajas tamo bhava. This means by lack of desire, taste for material objects, the state of ruchi, the appearance of relishing of hearing, chanting and other processes arises. So the lack of taste for material objects, so that actually that takes place at the stage of ruchi. So therefore this verse talks about ruchi and asakti. And asakti also. When the mind becomes fixed in the Shuddha Sattva deity of the Lord, this stage is called as asakti. Sitam Sattve Prasidati. This word actually tells that a person comes to the stage of asakti. So 20th verse. The 20th verse, a person progresses from the stage of asakti to rati. Rati is same as bhava, and then from bhava a person progresses to the stage of prema. So bhava and prema both are described in the 20th verse.
Evam prasanna manaso bhagavad bhakti yogatah bhagavat tattva vijnanam mukta sangasya jayate.
Next verse. Vidyate hridaya grantis chidyante sarva samshaya kshiyante chasya karmani drishta eva atmanishvare.
Thus the knots in the heart is pierced and all these givings are cut to pieces. The chain of filthy actions is terminated when one sees the self as master.
So here, after the stage of prema, so prema is the 12th stage. Of course, Rupa Goswami in the Bhakti Rasamrita gives 9 stages of bhakti. But here, the same 9 stages are explained in 14 stages. So starting from, I'll just recap the stages. First is starting from mercy of devotees, and then service to devotees. And third is faith. By serving the devotees, he develops faith. And then he surrenders to the feet of the Guru, fourth. And then he develops a desire to hear, fifth. And then he hears with taste. He gets a taste for hearing. Sixth. And seventh is anartha nivritti takes place. And when anarthas are almost destroyed, then he comes to the stage of nishta. Eighth. And then from nishta he comes to ruchi. And then asakti. And the 11th is bhava. And then 12th is prema. So now in the 21st verse, two more further stages are explained. Two more further stages is that experience of the Lord's sweetness and then all doubts being destroyed. The 13th stage is that experience of the Lord's sweetness. So vidyate hridaya grantis chidyante sarva shamshaya kshiyante chasya karani drishta evat manishare. So, drishta evat manishvare. Having seen the Lord, who is the soul, all karmas are destroyed. Huh. So then, all doubts such as thinking that the attainment is impossible are destroyed. The 13th stage is that experience of the Lord's sweetness. And the 14th stage is that then all the doubts are completely destroyed. So one may say like doubts are destroyed only at the last stage. So in one sense, actually, I was hearing thing. I would find the exact reference, but Kadambakanand Maharaj was writing in a, he was telling in a seminar that how he was quoting Vishwanatha Chakravarti's writings, how he was saying that there are some doubts remain only, which will be destroyed only when a person actually meets the Supreme Lord. But although some doubts are there, but still that does not deter a person from practicing bhakti. It's like when a person is going, driving a car on a dark road. As long as the headlights are on, you'll be able to see the road, and then you can actually go towards the destination. But as long as the headlights are on, you will not be able to see everything which is there in the road, everything which is on the actually other side of the road. But as long as the headlight is on, you can actually see the two lines of the road. You can continue to go towards the destination. So similarly, as long as we practice the follow the instructions of Guru, which are compared to the headlights, instructions of the Guru, Sadhu and Shastra, we can see the two lines of the road. And as long as we don't go beyond the two lines of the road, means like as long as we continue to practice the four regulative principles, and as long as the headlight is on, as long as we follow the instructions of Guru, Sadhu and Shastra and follow the regulative principles, and as long as we don't look behind. Looking behind means like looking to satisfy the material desires. So one can
go towards the destination, even though you may not know clearly, you may not see clearly what is there in the, like in the side of the road. You may not be able to see clearly all the features of, so what are the trees are present, etc. So similarly, he says that although certain doubts are there, but when we focus on following the instructions of Guru, Sadhu and Shastra, and we focus on practicing the regulative principles, we can continue to go towards the destination. We can continue to practice devotional service. So that's what he mentioned. And the doubts will be destroyed when a person completely experiences the Lord's sweetness. So in the 22nd verse, he says that this bhakti is pleasing in all circumstances. So he has been explaining the different stages of bhakti. This bhakti is pleasing in all circumstances. Even in the stage of sadhana also, this bhakti can be pleasing. Ato vaikava yonityam bhaktim paramaya muda vasudeve bhagavati kurvantya prasadhanim. So if you see in this verse, the word joy comes two times in this verse. Paramaya muda. Muda means joy, joyful. And atma prasadhanim. Prasadhanim means it gives joy to the atma. So that means, he says that since time immemorial, ato vai kavayo nityam. He is telling this bhakti is not a new process. Since time immemorial, many people they perform bhakti, which gives joy to the mind with great joy. So one word, paramaya, atma prasadani means this process, they practice bhakti which gives joy to the mind, atma prasadani. And how do they practice? With joy, paramaya muda. So Srila Vishnu Chakotakur says, by saying that they practice this process which gives joy to the mind with great joy, that shows that even on the stage of sadhana, there are no difficulties. Even on the stage of sadhana bhakti, one can practice bhakti with joy. So that is the implication of this one. In the case of other processes, they are troublesome during sadhana, and also even when a person attains, and also there is no guarantee of perfection, even when he perfects the process. For example, Krishna says, Klesho adhikataras tesham, avyakta sakta chetasam. So the path of impersonal realization is very troublesome. But the path of bhakti is actually joyful even during the practice of sadhana. So that is what is explained by Suta Goswami in this verse. Now we will quickly go through in the next 15 minutes the rest of the verses 23 to 34. Sattvam rajastamayiti prakritir gunastair yukta parama purusha yeka ihasya datte stityadaye hari virinchi hareti samya shreyamsi tatra kalu sattvatano nrinamsyu. So now, Suta Goswami says, now so far he established how bhakti is the process of abhideya. Now he is establishing how this bhakti should be performed for Vishnu. Or one should worship Bhagavan alone, giving up the worship of all the other devatas. So he says that one Supreme Lord accepting the three modes of material nature for the purpose of creation, maintenance and destruction, he appears in forms Vishnu, Brahma and Shiva. But out of these three forms, Vishnu alone is to be worshipped.
or the best result one can get is by worshipping Vishnu. Best result one can get is by worshipping Shreyamsi Tatra Kalu Satvatano Ninamsyu. Shreyamsi means for the best results, for the ultimate benefit, one should worship Vishnu, who is having a form made of Shuddha Sattva, Sattva Tanur Ninamsyu. Next verse.
Parthiva Daruno Dumas Tasmad Agnistrayi Mayaha Tamasastu Rajas Tasmad Sattvam Yad Brahma Darshanam.
In this verse, Sutta Goswami says, out of the three modes, mode of goodness is most favorable for practicing devotional service. So he explains that with the help of an analogy. Firewood, smoke, and fire. So in the case of wood, wood is actually inert in nature. There is no action in that. And it also does not have the quality of illumination. But on the contrary, smoke does not illuminate something, but it has the quality of action. Means like you can see something moving. But fire has both the quality of action and also the quality of illumination. So in this way, it's explained that rajas, like tamogun, a person is, there is no Rajas, which is agitating, is superior to Tamogun, which is inert. And Sattvaguna, being devoid of inertia and agitation, is superior because it gives a vision of Brahman. So Sattvaguna is actually favorable for practicing devotional service. That is the, just like fire is better than smoke, which is better than actually wood. So similarly, Sattvaguna is better than Rajogun, which is better than Tamogun. That is the implication of this verse. So now in the 25th verse, they say,
Bejire munayetagre bhagavantan adokshajam sattvam vishuddham kshemaya kalpante yenu tanyiha.
So here also he is mentioning Bejire Munaye Atagre. Agre means many sages in the past, they have worshipped the Supreme Lord. So it is not something, a new process. And then he mentions anybody who follows after the sages, they can also attain the same perfection. They can also attain liberation from this world. So that is why it is mentioned. Ye Anu. Anu means anybody who follows after them, they can also attain liberation. And then in the 26th verse, it is explained that how those people who desire liberation, they reject the other forms of the devatas. So 25th verse, Sutta Goswami gave a positive statement. How many people worshipped the Lord, and anybody who follows after those sages, they will also attain perfection. And then the 26th verse is giving a negative concomitance, in the sense by saying Anvaya and Vyatireka. Anvaya is like a positive statement, Vyatireka is like a negative statement. He is saying these people, they reject the other forms of devatas. One is how they accepted and worshipped the form of Vishnu, that is explained in 25th verse. In 26th verse, he is saying that how they rejected the other forms of the devatas.
Mumukshavo Gorarupan Hitva Bhutapatinata Narayana Kala Shanta Bhajanti Anasuyavaha.
So mumukshavo means those who are desiring liberation. They worship only the they reject the ghastly forms of the devatas, gora rupan. So one may say that if they are calling these forms of the devatas to be ghastly, are they envious of these devatas? One may get the question. But then it is explained, bhajanti anasuyavaha. They are not envious of the devatas. So anasuya means they do not criticize those devatas. They just recognize that devatas are not to be worshipped and Vishnu is to be worshipped. And one may get the question, when you are rejecting something, when you are rejecting the worship of somebody, maybe there is a fear that you may lose something. Some people may think that, oh, if I stop worshipping Lord Shiva, then I may lose something. If I stop worshipping this devata, I may lose something. So no, that is why the word used is Shanta. The forms of Vishnu which they worship are all blissful. You don't lose something. In fact, when you worship Vishnu, because his form is all blissful, by worshipping Vishnu, you will also get bliss. So mumukshava gora rupan hitva bhuta patinata. So how they reject the other forms of the devata, that's explained. Now in the 27th verse, what's explained is that one may get the question, if the forms of the devatas are to be rejected, they are not to be worshipped, then who are the people who get attracted to worship of these devatas? Who are the people who worship the forms other than Vishnu? If Vishnu is to be worshipped, who are the people who don't worship Vishnu, who worship the other devatas? So it is explained, Rajas Tamas Prakritaya Samashila Bhajanti Vai. So those who are absorbed in modes of passion and ignorance, they get attracted to similar forms which are also in mode of passion and ignorance. Samashila Bhajanti Vai. So Prabhupada says, birds of a same feather flock together. You tell me who your associates are, I will tell you what kind of person you are. So Rajastama Prakritaya Samashila Bhajanti Vai. Those who are in the modes of passion and ignorance, they get attracted to similar forms which are in mode of passion and ignorance. That means all the forms of the devatas, Prabhupada writes in the purport, that 27th verse, no? He says that somewhere Prabhupada explained that all these forms of the devatas, they are actually, in one sense, some aspect of mode of passion and ignorance is there. So they worship these devatas. And with what purpose they worship? They worship the devatas with the desire to get progeny, pitru bhuta prajeshadin, with the desire to get wealth, and with the desire to get different material benedictions. So that is what is explained in the 27th verse. Now, because it is explained, one should not worship the other devatas, then one may get the question, but the Vedas themselves say that Vedas themselves describe in so many places how the devatas are supposed to be worshipped. So now, that is why in the next two verses, Suta Goswami says how worship of Vasudev is the goal of all the Vedas, sacrifices, all the goal of all the austerities and charity, everything. We'll recite these two verses. Vasudeva para Veda, Vasudeva para Maka, Vasudeva para Yoga, Vasudeva para Kriya, Vasudeva param Jnanam, Vasudeva param Tapaha, Vasudeva paro Dharmo, Vasudeva para Gatihi. So, in this verse, it is explained, Vasudev is the purport of the Vedas, Vasudev is the object of all sacrifices,
yoga, varnashram, knowledge and austerities are all dependent on Vasudev. Bhakti is dependent on Vasudev. So therefore, Vasudev is the Lord Vasudev is the goal of everything. So that's what is explained in these two verses. Now, in the 30th verse, Sutta Goswami says, in the beginning of material creation, the absolute personality of Godhead in his transcendental position created the energies of cause and effect by his own internal energy. So now in the 30th to 33rd verse, he explains how the Lord, having created this material world by his energies, he enters into the material world and he gives facilities for the living entities to enjoy the material sense objects. So he explains that how that Supreme Lord, like he only actually enters the material world, and he enters and he situated the super soul in everyone's heart, and he actually gives facilities for the living entities to enjoy the different sense objects. So that is explained from 30th to 33rd verse. So you can just read the translations of the verses. So although the Lord enters within the material world, but he is not affected by the material atmosphere. So that is explained in 31st verse. So the 32nd verse, Sutta Goswami gives an analogy to explain how the Lord enters creation. So, like, the analogy is that just like a fire permeates wood, so similarly, the Lord appears to be of many varieties, though he is the absolute one and without a second.
Thus, the Lord of the universe maintains all planets inhabited by demigods, men, and lower angels. Assuming the roles of incarnation, he performs often to reclaim those in the mode of
the So, the 32nd and 33rd verses, it is explained. Just as fire is always situated in pieces of wood, so the Lord Vishnu is situated in all living entities. And fire is situated in wood. And when that wood comes in contact with the fire which is there within the wood, that is brought out. And that fire consumes the wood. So similarly, the super soul is present within the heart of a living entity. And by the process of hearing and chanting, the covering of the Maya upon the living entity, that gets destroyed. It's like the fire within it is brought out, and that fire actually consumes the wood. Similarly, by the process of hearing and chanting, in that way, when we worship the super soul within, that actually destroys the covering, and then a person comes in contact with the Supreme Lord. So Prabhupada writes that, he says the difference between humanity and animality is that a human being can hear properly and an animal cannot. So here, this is the example, difference he gives between human being and animal. And then in the 33rd verse, he says that the super soul having entered all the bodies with the material sense objects, he makes the living entity enjoy the sense objects, which are actually under the three modes. Means super soul is actually assisting the living entity by reminding him that how he had so many desires to enjoy sense objects, and it's actually helping the living entity to enjoy the sense objects. And the same super soul, he also comes as different incarnations. That is explained in the 34th verse. Bhavayatyesha satvena lokanvai loka bhavanaha
लीलावतारानुरतो देवतिर्यन्नरादिषु
So this way the Lord appears in different forms as a demigod, as an animal, as a human being for the purpose of protecting the world and performs many pastimes. When it is explained, Bhavayat Yesha Sattvena, he protects the world by actually displaying different pastimes and by attracting the living entities towards him, by actually inspiring the living entities to develop love towards him. So I'll briefly summarize this chapter. So this chapter began with Suta Goswami. The first verse, Vyasdev tells that Suta Goswami became very pleased after hearing the questions of the sages. And Suta Goswami, the second and third verse, he offers obeisances to Shukadev Goswami, in which the different qualities of Shukadev Goswami are explained, how Shukadev Goswami is liberated from birth and how he affected even the trees as a super soul, and how Vyasdev went after him. So the Suta Goswami was offering obeisances to Shukadev Goswami in second and third verse. And the fourth verse, he offers obeisances to the presiding deity, the devata of the subject of the book, that is Lord Krishna, and the sage Vyasdev, who is interested with this particular book, and Saraswati Devi, who is the Shakti of the work. And then the fifth verse, he actually thanks the sages for asking the questions. And he says, simply by such questions, one's intelligence will be completely satisfied. And then from the 6th to 22nd verse, he talks about how bhakti as the process of abhideya. In the 6th verse, he tells that the ultimate occupational duty by which a person will be completely satisfied is by performing unalloyed devotional service without any interruption. In the 7th verse, he describes the positive benefits of bhakti. And then 8th verse, he tells, if you do not perform bhakti, then it is just a useless labor, even if you perform all the duties perfectly. And then in the 9th verse, he says, the purpose of dharma is ultimate liberation and not to earn artha. And then the 10th verse, he says, how a person can be focused in the ultimate liberation, how a person can actually cannot get carried away by the desires for sense gratification is by actually inquiring about the absolute truth, Jivasi Tattva Jignasa. And what is that absolute truth? That is described in the 11th verse. And the 12th verse describes how to actually how to realize the absolute truth by the process of bhakti. The five qualities are mentioned because of that process of bhakti is rare. And then the 13th verse, it is explained, even the goal of all varnashram duties is to actually please the Supreme Lord. Atha Pumbi Rujada Sreshta. And then in the 14th verse, Suta Goswami says, even if a person is not able to perform all the varnashram duties, at least one should focus on these four activities of hearing, glorifying, remembering and worshipping the Lord. And the 15th verse, he says, if you are not used to glorifying or remembering, just focus on hearing. Kona kuriyat katharatim. Simply by remembering the Lord, one can actually cut the bondage of karma. So who will not hear about the Lord? And then from 16th to 21st verse, he gives 14 stages of progress. So in order to hear, you have to have an eagerness to hear. So how to develop the eagerness to hear? You have to actually serve the devotees. So by the mercy of the devotees, you serve the devotees, and then you develop a faith, and then you surrender it to your guru. Then by surrendering to a guru, you are eager to hear and then hear with taste. Like that, the different stages are mentioned from prema, and then after prema, a person actually experiences the sweetness of the Lord's form. And then the last stage is all the doubts are destroyed. So 14 stages are explained till the 21st verse. And the 22nd verse, he concludes by saying, this bhakti can be practiced in a joyful manner even in the stage of sadhana. Since time immemorial, people have been practicing this bhakti, which gives pleasure to the mind with great joy. And then, having explained about bhakti, now from the 23rd to 34th verse, he tells that how only Vishnu alone is to be worshipped. So 23rd verse, he explains that although Lord assumes the forms of Vishnu, Brahma and Shiva, Vishnu alone is to be worshipped for the highest welfare. Shreyamsi Sattva Tanur. And the 24th verse, he explains that Sattva Gun is favorable for practicing bhakti, for worshipping Vishnu. And he gives an analogy for that. And then in the 25th verse, he says that many people in the past, they have been worshipping Vishnu. And if we simply follow after them, one can also attain perfection. And then he says that they reject the ghastly forms of the demigods. But although they reject the ghastly forms of the demigods, but they are not envious of the demigods. Anasuyavaha. Then 27th verse explains that who are the people who worship the demigods? So Rajastama Prakriti, those who are in the modes of passion, ignorance, they worship the demigods. And one may say, if demigods are not to be worshipped, there are so many statements in the Vedas, they also talk about demigod worship. What about those statements? Then he says, actually, Vasudev is the actual purport of the Vedas and all the sacrifices, etc. That is explained in two verses, in 28 and 29. And then from 30th through 33rd verse, he explains how the Lord, he creates this material world through his different energies, and he enters the world, and having entered this world, although he enters the world, he does not get affected by this world. And having entered, he actually helps the living entities to enjoy the sense objects. And that Supreme Lord, he actually also appears as different Leelavataras. That is explained in the 34th verse. As devatas, animals and humans, to protect the world through his role as the controller of Sattva Gun. So in this way this chapter ends. So I'll stop here. So tomorrow I think Varang Prabhu will take the class. Antara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Shila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki jai.
Please take the questions for tomorrow's exam. First question, write the verse and translation of 1.2.3. Verse and translation of 1.2.3. Yasvanubhavam. Second, define Dvija, Vipra, Vaishnava, Pravritti Marga and Nivritti Marga. Dvija, Vipra, Vaishnava, Pravritti Marga and Nivritti Marga. Just one phrase or one line definitions, 3 marks. Third question, define Dharma. What is the ultimate purpose of Dharma? What is the Parodharma for all humanity? In the same question. Explain in detail based on 1.2.6 to 15 and Prabhupada's purports. Explain in detail based on 1.2.6 to 15 and respective purports by Prabhupada. Define Dharma. What is the ultimate purpose of Dharma? What is Parodharma for all humanity? Explain. Based on 1.2.6 to 15. Also quote the 6th and 15th verses. Then fourth question. This third question is for 20 marks. Just write verses. Then fourth question. Write a brief note on the stages through which one progresses in bhakti. Write a brief note on the stages through which one progresses in bhakti based on 1.2.16 to 22. Also quote the 17th verse. This is for 15 marks. 15 marks for this. Quote 17th verse. Then last question. Explain the superiority of Krishna and worship of Krishna over all other devatas or processes based on 1.2.23-29. Explain the superiority of Krishna and worship of Krishna from 23 to 29. This is 7 marks. 1.2.23-29. 7 marks. Some are like descriptive questions, you can just try it in short, whatever you can manage within half an hour, you can plan the answers. And I have given this overview notes of all 12 cantos, verse by verse overview notes. A 1 or 2 pages summary of each chapter is given in that notes, of all 12 cantos to Abhijit Prabhu. Whoever needs can take from him. And I have given the soft copies of Chakravarti commentary also, VCT commentary also I gave. In both EPUB format, MOBI format, Word files also I give. If whoever wants can collect from him. Thank you. Only verse you can read. Translation is included in your answer. Supposed to be.